Welcome to this fourth in our series of podcasts for the Economic Disruptor Awards, launched by The Spectator under the sponsorship of the private bank Julius Baer. Today we're in Manchester. We're on the 19th floor of a brand new office building in Manchester. We're looking out across a rather grey Manchester skyline, but it's one which tells us immediately that there's a lot of economic activity going on. You can see as many tower cranes across Manchester as you might see if you were looking across Hong Kong or some other emerging market, great centre of capitalism. So Manchester's a thriving place, and it's a pleasure for us to be here today. And I have with me two guests for this podcast. First, James Bailey, who is Managing Director of Julius Baer's business in Manchester and the Northwest. And secondly, Hugh Campbell, who is the founder and managing partner of GP Bullhound, which is a merchant banking and venture capital investment business, which Hugh will tell us a little bit about in a moment. So let me start straight away with James and ask him just to introduce Julius Baer's business in this region.
Certainly, Martin. Yes, Julius Baer is a global institution, a global private bank, and we have a unique focus, absolute focus, on the management of wealth for our clients around the world, both here in the Northwest and around the world. And part of that wealth is, of course, their business interests. Many of those businesses are what you might refer to as being innovative, and some innovative to the extent of being disruptive.
Very good. Hugh, your business is a kind of pan-European investment business, the sort of business that would perhaps more naturally be associated with the City of London still, but you choose to operate from Manchester. I know you have some Manchester roots personally, but just tell us why Manchester for you?
Well, when we started the business in London, I think we had a perhaps more traditional view on what an investment bank should be, sitting somewhere in the square mile and transacting deals all over the world. However, the focus and the heartbeat of our business is the entrepreneur, and the entrepreneur in the technology sector. So for us, we had to get closer to these entrepreneurs. And as we all know, the technology ecosystem in Europe is no longer just in London or in Berlin. It's in Stockholm and Manchester and Copenhagen, Helsinki. And so we've adopted a very pan-European strategy, as you rightly say, in order to get closer to the entrepreneurs. And for them, we provide a set of products and services to help them build these European pioneering companies into global success stories.
And just give us an idea of the scale of your business in numbers of people and sums invested and so on.
So we were four people when we started the business 20 years ago, and today we're 100 people across three continents, two offices in the US, an office in Hong Kong, and as I mentioned previously, all over Europe. We're investing from our fourth fund, which is about $100 million, and there's about 10 people employed on our investment business and 90 that are working with entrepreneurs every day to help them either raise capital or, when the time is right, sell their business.
And it's a business which has made a considerable impact, speaking as someone who writes about this kind of stuff. And I think you do your own. Are they competitions for innovators? There's a GP Bullhound Award. Is there something like that?
Yes, I think what we try to do is to bring entrepreneurs together to learn from one another. So you're absolutely right. We have a Northern Tech Awards, which has a list of the top 100 fastest growing businesses, you know, in and around the North. We also have a number of other events for technology entrepreneurs and to allow the media in some ways to engage with them by finding out in some ways who the best is.
And if we look at the North, I mean, particularly Manchester and the Northwest, and also Wales is part of this regional discussion today. We think, of course, traditionally of Manchester as the great cotton city, centre of textile activity, trading across the Atlantic through the port of Liverpool and so on. We think of Wales as coal mining and shipping and that kind of thing. Now, today, what do you think are the business strengths of this region, particularly in the more innovative fields? Is there any connection with the old industries of the region, or has it completely changed?
No, I mean, clearly the underlying technology has completely changed. But a lot of the skills that particularly the big trading environments, the big trading cities of the north have developed from the Industrial Revolution are very important today. So you'll find if you look in the disruptive sectors, particularly in technology, that many of them have a very strong online, what I would call business to consumer element. So Manchester is home to Auto Trader, to Boohoo, the online fashion business, which has been such a huge success story since its flotation.
AO is one I think of as a tremendous success for this region, the white goods appliances business. Yeah,
and I think that trading mentality, this instinctive understanding of what consumers and customers and households want, rings very true for this whole region. On the flip side, we've also seen some great success stories in traditional enterprise software, particularly around areas such as security, with businesses like Surf Control, which was built out of Congleton, and also with public businesses like NCC Group. So whilst the e-commerce value chain has a very rich history, I think we're also finding that traditional software has also become a bedrock of what this region is all about.
And James, just as an observation of mine, having worked in another capacity in Manchester for a decade from time to time, is that it's a place where there is very good communication between local government and the universities and the business sector. So it's a particularly, to use a cliched word, vibrant place to do business, partly because it works. I mean, things work very well. There's a lot of coordination going on. Do you observe that?
Absolutely. As somebody who arrived in Manchester 24 years ago and stayed put, it is, I think, testament to the city and the city region that there's been an extraordinary degree of political stability. So local government has been a force for good in revolutionizing the approach of the city, revolutionizing the thought process behind the development of new business avenues. And certainly when you consider the impact of the credit crunch of 2008-2010, the ability for local government to step in and provide capital in a way which others did not has been very marked.
But I would also say, Martin, that whilst Manchester is probably the most dominant economic region for disruptive businesses in this part of your awards, there are great centres of disruption built around universities all across the region. We spend a lot of time in Edinburgh, that have, of course, had great success with Skyscanner, selling recently to a large Chinese group. There's a very strong financial services cluster, fintech, I guess, is the current modern word, in Leeds, and some very interesting industrial and manufacturing technologies coming out of Newcastle and also Sheffield. So whilst Manchester has this cachet, it has the football clubs and it has the airport, I think great investors will find great businesses spread all across the region.
Yes, it's true. Manchester has a very strong brand, and it is, in large part, it is to do with the football clubs, isn't it? It's of course, its more modern or more recent claim to fame is something called graphene, the strongest and thinnest material ever invented in the university here. Is that something that you're actually seeing any commercial outcomes from yet, or is that still in the realm of the research laboratory?
Well, the government have just, snipped the ribbon to open the National Graphene Institute, which I think was a £60 million investment right in the heart of Manchester. So I would say that research is definitely the key area where the money is being spent. But there's no doubt that there's capital from all across the world, particularly from China and even Russia, coming into the city to get hold of this amazing material and to think carefully about the uses for this invention. And I think it's great testament to the academic research that comes out of Manchester, which of course was home to Alan Turing, we should remember, many years ago. And this is very much the next generation of these, you know, superstar inventors that are based in the city.
Yes, indeed. So Manchester claims to have built the first working computer. I think Philadelphia likes to make a very similar claim, but we know the first working computer was built, I think, in the Ferranti laboratories, not a mile from where we're sitting. Anyway, let's move on and talk briefly about the three regional semi-finalists for the Manchester, North West and Wales region. We've got three companies we've been looking at. They're called Amplify, Evergreen Life and Arctic Shores. And I'm going to ask James just briefly to describe each of the three and then Hugh to offer a comment and tell us what are the key questions he would ask, particularly in relation to the idea of disruptor, which we must focus on in this. In what way are these businesses truly disruptive? So perhaps we could start with Amplify, James. Would you mind just describing it for us?
Of course. It seems rather presumptuous in some ways to be describing a business which is based in Cardiff from the heart of Manchester. But anyway, I'll give it a go. So this is a cloud-based company, a cloud-based system, which mines big data, uses AI and machine learning to mine the internet for business intelligence, which they consider to be a real step change in the way in which this works.
It calls itself the most advanced business intelligence and research tool in the world. That's quite a big claim. Hugh, what was your first reaction to reading about this?
Well, I think, first of all, the product itself has such a great name. Data Voyant gives you this sense of being prophetic in its nature. And I think that, you know, there's a lot to be said for the idea of intelligent data. And if this business can truly find data where others fail to discover it and in some ways visualize, analyze, combine, then of course it is in some ways a holy grail. I mean, we must remember back to the days of this great Cambridge business, Autonomy, which was very much focused on searching unstructured data. And it strikes me that Amplify is not only doing this, but trying to seek this data in the darker reaches of the internet.
Another part of its description of itself is that it enables quicker and more agile strategic decision-making, delivering unbiased insight and significantly reducing traditional consultancy-led projects from around 3 months to as little as 1 week. That again struck me as a big claim and a very interesting one, in the sense that, do you think it's possible that this kind of technology could lead you to take decisions too quickly? Is that, or is that a stupid thing to say, that actually in the modern world, speed of decision-making, speed of working your way through all the available information is an absolute key to being ahead of your competitors?
No, I think speed, I mean, not forgetting cost, but speed is critical, particularly in the modern workplace. I mean, businesses are built at such great speed nowadays that decisive decision-making, even if a proportion of your decisions are wrong, is perfectly okay. So I think the underlying opportunity that Amplify are going after is fascinating. I think the fact that it has broad applicability across the enterprise, from projects, you know, perhaps in the sales and marketing team, all the way through to the warehouse team, is particularly interesting. But it does create a sales challenge. You know, for a young company, where do you focus within these large enterprises? So I'd be very interested in understanding more about the Trojan horse in the sales team. Is there a particular type of project where this technology is very relevant?
Good. Well, we look forward to finding out more about Amplify as we go forward with the judging process. But let's move on to the second one of our three companies today, Evergreen Life. James, would you just introduce that for us?
So from Amplify's world of big data, perhaps if there is such a thing, to the world of little data in the hands of Evergreen, which is an NHS-approved app, which basically allows patients to access their patient records wherever those records may be held. So that democratization of information to allow them to both take control of their own patient history and to allow others to access it at their behest.
Hugh, what was your reaction to this one?
Well, I think as a health-conscious individual, it's a very interesting end game, this idea of being able to combine the information that my GP knows about me with information that I know about me, and that perhaps my personal trainer and the people at Bupa, etc., and pulling this all together into one central app is a very interesting idea. I do think there are some challenges in pulling all of this data together, but it seems like they've made a great start, being, I think they claim, the only app that has all three GP systems connected to it. And that's, of course, a great start.
And I think it is interesting that the NHS, because it's enormously large, bureaucratic, slow to change, overburdened in many ways, struggling to cope with volume of patients and the cost pressures and so on, creates an enormous number of opportunities for disruptors if they can work their way through the system. So actually, we did have a number of entrants for the awards in similar fields, which were either trying to make it easier to get a doctor's appointment, there were several of those, or trying to make it easier to get your repeat prescription. This one doing all of these things, plus trying to help the patient manage their own data. I think patients live in fear of their data being lost or not being available to one doctor at an urgent moment when it's in the hands of another doctor and so on. These are all issues that matter a great deal to the citizen. So the company that can break through and really make a difference would be a really major disruptor and could change people's lives. So again, we look forward to learning more about Evergreen Life. Our third contender today is Arctic Shores. James, again, just give us the brief outline of that one.
So Arctic Shores, another Manchester-based company, have developed a way of using psychometric, or pioneering the way of using psychometric assessments to help individuals and companies make better career and hiring decisions. They say that they use psychometric science and game technology to deliver objectivity, accuracy, and fairness in calculating selection in a highly engaging format.
Very good. Hugh, any thoughts on that one?
Well, as a psychology graduate myself, I have a particular soft spot for this sort of business. I mean, we at GP Bullhound, as the business have grown, increasingly recognize the importance of bringing in the right talent at the right time. And there's no doubt that the traditional structure of face-to-face interviews, recruiters, needs a big shake-up. And bringing intelligent psychometric data to the table in a cost-effective, and I would say, looking at these products, friendly way, is very innovative, I think.
Good. Well, we're going to move on. Next in our series of podcasts, we're going to Birmingham to complete the series. But before we finish our conversation today, I just want to ask Hugh to give us his definition in a paragraph. I'm not asking you to do it in a single sentence of 12 words, as it were, but just to talk around the idea of disruptors. It's your professional field. The success of a business like yours depends on picking and backing disruptors. But what are the key characteristics that you look at when you're trying to identify a genuine and important disruptor in any given sector?
Well, disruptive businesses have at their heart an individual, and in many cases, a group of individuals, a group of co-founders. I noticed with Amplify that there were 5 co-founders, which I think is a very interesting development. More and more disruptive businesses have a combination of great skills at the center, maybe a technical founder, maybe a founder with great vision, maybe a third founder with a strong marketing perspective. So we look at these individuals, all these teams of individuals, and we try and assess their relentlessness. You know, how much stamina do they have? Because, you know, entrepreneurs work 24 hours a day to escape the 9-to-5 of everybody else, and you need great stamina to be successful. You also need to have a vision which can mobilize not just customers, but your ability to recruit the greatest staff. So the vision and the goal needs to be long-term and seismic. If you look at Spotify, for example, founded by Martin and Daniel, they had a vision to take on a whole industry and have successfully done that. There's still work to do, and they have Apple as a great competitor. but they've moved from a startup in Stockholm less than 10 years ago to a $35 billion IPO. So we look for this relentless skill, this stamina, and this strong vision.
Yeah, thank you. I think relentlessness and stamina, interesting key words to throw into this discussion. And what about if you are, you're a, you know, UK startup, you're one of the three key founders of a UK startup, you've got stamina, you are relentless. Is there any issue about availability of capital? Both of you may have a final comment on this. Is there a sufficiently well-developed angel investor, venture capital sector in London, in Manchester, around the regions and so on, to really give these kind of companies the boost, the rocket boost they need?
Yes, I do think there is. I think since we've got into the industry 20 years ago, it's been a wholesale change. There have been tremendous improvements in relief for wealthy individuals. It's called EIS, to participate as business angels in technology companies, disruptive businesses. We've had a huge inflow of capital from around the world into the next stage up, which would be venture capital. And of course, the UK has always been very good at private equity, which is, you know, managing risk and raising money and debt for slightly later stage companies. So I think we have the best investor ladder, if I may call it that, than we've ever had before.
And James, amongst your client base, are people more and more interested in investing in these kind of vehicles and companies and so on?
Certainly that is the case, Martin. I think that the reliefs, the government-backed tax reliefs, which Hugh has mentioned, have been pivotal in creating that enthusiasm, but also the success stories, the very visible success stories we've seen around the world, have encouraged investors of wealth to put their money into startup ventures in a much greater fashion. If there's one risk, if I may say so, if there's one risk to this ecosystem which supports the bottom-up growth of particularly pre-money companies, is the fact that the market for angels is still quite fragmented. If you're somebody who has an interest in this out on the street, gaining that knowledge about where to look to find the companies in which you want to invest is quite a challenge still.
And that's one of the things that you advise people on?
We certainly help them to find the right people to speak to, absolutely.
Yeah. Introducing the right people must be the key. Anyway, we're going to conclude there. So I say thank you very much to James Bailey and Hugh Campbell for joining me in this conversation. It's been great to be in Manchester, such a thriving city and a thriving region. We move on next to Birmingham for the last of our conversations about the Spectator's Economic Disruptor of the Year awards. Thank you very much.